You're listening to the Brown Trout and Bridge Beers podcast.
There it is. Easy.
Well, everybody, thanks for tuning in again. It's another episode of Brown Trout and Bridge Beers, sponsored by nobody, because Hams is still refusing to offer us a sponsorship. But one of these days, they might actually follow through and help us out. Grant here. We've got Matt, and we've got our guest Aaron from the North Shore-ish area of Minnesota. Aaron, why don't you give yourself a quick introduction? Who are you? Where are you from? What are you doing?
Hey, everyone. I am Aaron Gerlovich. I am with Minnesota Steelheader, first and foremost. I have been a part of Minnesota Steelheader for about 7 years now. We're a nonprofit that is dedicated towards education and getting more people on the water chasing steelhead. Secondly, I am the co-owner of North Shore Guide Service and one of the lead guides for steelhead, trout, and salmon on the North Shore of Minnesota, going from Duluth to almost the Canadian border. And lastly, I am a hardcore steelhead junkie and fly junkie that just belly beats fish, man. Love it.
That's pretty good. What about, so let's talk about Minnesota Steelheader. You know, how long have you been with them, and, you know, what is their kind of, mission, right? For the people of Minnesota, really the Midwest in general.
Yeah. So I think I want to say 7 years, and I was thinking about that, earlier today, and I have to like look it up and see when I was really brought on board with Minnesota Steelheader, but roughly 7 years I got involved with them. And what our goal and our main mission is just to inform, inspire, and get more people out fishing on the North Shore, because it's for some people, like you and I were talking about earlier, it can be intimidating, but we offer free clinics that kind of break those barriers down and really make it simple for people to understand. We have a website that offers a boatload of information for people that are just getting started. They may want to know what to use, what things to buy, because that can be daunting. You know, going to a fly shop or going to your local tackle shop and knowing what to outfit with. Right. So we've got a couple of nice resources on there to really help a person out. But the cool thing about us is we have staff that both live in up north here. We have Lisa, Brian, and I that live in the Arrowhead region, North Shore region. And then we have a couple other great people, Davin, Neil, we have Andrew, and the list goes on of our field staff members and board directors. But they're down in St. Paul. So it's cool. We can kind of divide and conquer. And we do have some events down at Summit Brewery in the winter. It's kind of like a meet and greet steelhead social seminar. And a few other clinics, like I said, but we're spread out. And one goal, one mission in mind is to just get more people steelheading.
Well, that's awesome. Good to hear. You know, because like I said, yeah, it can feel a little daunting, a little intimidating. You know, you're dealing with what seems to be, you know, if you're coming from the Driftless, you're dealing with a little louder water. You know, a little different shorelines, definitely bigger fish, bigger tackle to deal with. So it's awesome that you guys have those clinics. And I've been to, was that a couple of years ago? My buddy Bob and I came up and we did that April. Mm-hmm. I think it was in April or March, that spring steelhead clinic with you guys. And I know him and I both learned a lot, and he's been up there trying to fish as much as he can too. Using the tools that you guys really showed us what to fish with. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I've seen Bob out actually a few times. On a few of the Middle Shore rivers, I stopped and said hi to him. And I think he owned a couple of fish last year. He did.
He was pretty excited about it. I'm heading up. We're going to do some deer camp prepping here this upcoming weekend. So I'll see Bob and see what his plans are for the fall fishing run. Nice. Hopefully he can get out. But that's good. That I know that you guys are doing that, and I'm assuming everything's kind of put on hold right now. Do you have any events coming up with Minnesota Steelhead?
We do have scheduled events. We would have our Minnesota Steelheader Pink Salmon Clinic, which would be this fall, which should be like next weekend. Okay. If things were corona free. We're hoping to get back on board and maybe get going with our shore casting clinic that we do in the winter, which is like January, February. And we're hoping that next year, next spring, we can get right back into things, because it sucked for all the crew to not be able to get out. We had to cancel our clinics, which was a bummer.
Fair, but yeah,
that's the story all around, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's canceling everything.
Although apparently the Big Ten is going to start playing football again. I just read today. So like 8-game season with still potential to get in the playoffs or something like that. So,
oh, wow.
I don't know.
All right.
Can't live without football in the Midwest. Well, so we'll see what happens. But least we can still go on fishing on our own. You know, that's a plus. Matt, do you have any questions about the Minnesota Steelhead guys?
No, I mean, I think he covered what their group is pretty well.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the actual fishing part of Steelhead and up on the North Shore.
The good stuff.
The good stuff. I don't even know where to start. I have so many questions. Let's go with this one. What's your, would you give your favorite beginner stream for somebody to try out if they're coming from the city land?
Yeah, I would. I'll give you a couple. How about that?
Good.
So if you want one that's nice and close to town, I'm going to say the Lester, and people are going to hear this and they're going to go, why would you recommend it? It's a zoo. It is. It's busy. It's not like Salmon River, New York busy. You know, it's not like shoulder to shoulder. When people say that term up here, you know, they really don't know what shoulder to shoulder is. It's busy, but you can find your own pocket. Okay. And you can find your own fish. The Lester, for a reason, it takes so many fish. It takes steelhead and it takes the Kamloops still. They're being phased out, obviously, but we'll have the clip steelhead coming in, and it just takes huge runs of fish. It's easy to fish. It's very accessible. It's close to town. And you will see people, but that's to be expected. The next one that you can do, which would be the, say, Sucker River. A lot of people fish that one. That's very, very popular. Nice parking, a nice trail down to the river. That one does have some limited access now with landowners restricting it. And there's still plenty of access available. Just respect those landowners' wishes, and signs are posted, obviously. So trespassing is not an issue. That one takes a ton of fish as well. Easy to drift. The next one would be going up the shore. I'm starting in Duluth. I should have said. The next one would be north of Two Harbors, would be the Stewart River. And that's, again, easy to fish, great walking trail. You can take a power line down to the upper holes on it. And, you will see some people, some weeks are busier than others. But, I tell people, this isn't much of a secret anymore, is if you want to get good steelhead fishing, wait until walleye opener. You can wait, kind of hang out, relax all spring. You don't have to beat yourself up in the 30 degree weather and the mid 30s water temp. Fish aren't active. you know, wait until walleye open or when people are in their boat, they're trolling, they're jigging for walleyes on Vermilion because they've been itching all spring. Yeah. And go to some of those rivers that are close to town and they're uncrowded. You know, you'll get your own water and you'll get active fish that are really hitting hard.
That's awesome. That's I kind of feel that way about driftless fishing down here just for trout when warm water fishing starts up in the spring for the bass, and then definitely the when the muskie guys leave the water. And then in the fall time, I feel like as soon as grouse hunting and bow hunting opens up, you know, because I think this weekend's opener, or maybe last week when it was open in Wisconsin. Yep. Everybody on the fringe that kind of does both, they just leave the water, and then all of a sudden you're kind of left to your own on the streams, which is perfect. It's always nice. But like you said, it's never salmon river shoulder to shoulder. You can always get more than 100 yards away from a bridge and you're probably going to find some water yourself.
Yeah. And the, you know, guys that are from the driftless that are used to fishing small water, maybe if you're used to going out west and fishing like, Bighorn Mountain area, they're just for example, you know what pocket water is. You know, you know how to fish that small little pocket water. You don't have to fish this big long run or this nice big pool. You can still pick these little pockets apart and have your own little active, you know, pot of active fish right in front of you. And there's nobody else around. So kind of cool.
So setup wise, let's say you're new to the game. Are you sending people to the fly shop to get some Berkeley trout worms and a couple hooks or what's your suggestion?
I make Pyrrhus cry. That's my I tell you. So when I started steelhead fishing, when I was 15 years old, getting dropped off at the river, I was dropped off with my night crawlers and my hooks and my 5-weight fly rod with my Fluger Medalist, or my Fluger President taped on to the reel seat because I didn't have anything else. So I was bobber fishing, chunking crawlers. And caught a lot of fish, you know, and that from then on, it was just like, you know, I like going down, I like catching fish, and you can do the traditional fly thing. But the tough thing about the North Shore is it is fast. In the spring, we get some runoff and that water is ripping. And I don't care what kind of weight you're using, what kind of indicator setup, that if fly line is getting tugged right out of the strike zone, it's gone. You know, it's not even, you're not down. You know, I send guys, you know, obviously the eggs and the stone flies are still viable and good, but squirmy wormies, mop flies, anything that's just down and dirty, you know, mop and glow.
Are you using mop flies for steelhead?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's dirty.
Carfall, yeah. Like that.
I feel dirty just talking about it.
So check this one out. So I tie a lot of these up, and I'll give you a little secret weapon. But this is a mop, little green weenie. See the little legs on there?
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't watch yourself. I feel dirty just holding this, but you know what? That's gonna get lunched up. But yeah, they love them because we have a lot of the green caddis. See, that's big on for sure.
Okay.
So
you're
definitely too proud.
No, and that's fair. So a lot of times you guys are running, let's call it a fly rod and reel, but you're really running a mono line setup off that to get the drift down. And are you using bobbers, or are you just kind of high sticking it to work your way through those pools?
So it's like you said, it's a fly rod. My go-to setup is a 9-foot, 8-weight fast action rod with a smaller reel on it, you know, like a 5-6 size reel. So it's nice and light, spooled with mono, 20-pound running line. I mean, I could call it running line. I could call it OPSD running line. You're good to go.
Is the fly rod just to get you some length out in the river? I mean, why wouldn't you just use conventional spinning gear?
Because conventional spinning gear, I've been working with a couple of guys at Elk River Customs, and we've been trying to design a rod. We got one now that's good. I've been testing it, but the 9'8", you know, these manufacturers are making fly rods so light in hand. The recoil guides on them are super light. You don't have to bother with all the spinning guides. There's not the extended fighting butt. There's not the, you know, you don't need a big butt on it. So they're nimble in hand. They're super light, super sensitive, and they cradle line really, really nice, just like you want a steelhead rod to do. So you can take a decent fly rod and you spool it with mono when you're styling. It's called chucking mono. It's down and dirty, but 90% of the guys on the shore, if you want to really put numbers up, you're chucking mono. All
right.
That's fair.
Chucking mono.
Chucking mono. I got to ask, have you tried a Tinkara rod yet?
I guided a Tinkara guy for a steelhead. We got him a fish.
That's awesome.
Nice.
I was thinking about it. Lightweight, you know, be able to drift stuff through there with one of those.
Yeah, he snapped a lot of fish off.
I bet. But
we got one. So if you're gonna run a fly rod though, like later in the season, when the water gets a little bit lower, more manageable, then I'm fly fishing. You know, I'm going fat line. I'm going, I go with a 10'7" weight to really mend line nice and cover some more water, indicator line, SA or Rio, whatever you want. And then, I'm throwing like a thingamabobber on it. And, you're throwing eggs, stones, caddis, whatever you want. But, later in the year, that line becomes a lot more prevalent because you can control those drifts a lot nicer than the mono. The mono just goes in and it goes right to the bottom. And you know, you can imagine you're not getting much of a drift unless you got fast water pushing that split shot down.
Yeah.
But you go with the fly rod with that indicator set up and you can really just creep it perfect. So the fat line has its advantages later in the year when the water is more manageable, but early spring, it is tough to get down.
So you're primarily nymphing then for steelhead, not like swinging wet flies or any of the fancy stuff.
You can see streamers in the later part of the year. Some guys do swing, and that is rivers like the Baptism, the Arrowhead Brool. Guys will get up there and swing, but we just don't have the. Our rivers are tight. Some of our rivers, you know, you take a switch rod, 11-foot switch rod or 12-foot rod, you could probably put it across the river, like a log and walk over. It's so narrow. But some guys do swing, and, you know, it's good for them. They get out and practice their casting all spring, and then we catch fish.
Yeah. That's fair. Very fair.
But, no, I've been dabbling with 11-11 a shorts bay, and it's a blast, man. It's a fun time. I just wish I could catch more freaking fish on it. That's all.
Mm-hmm. So you primarily fish the North Shore, then Minnesota side. You don't venture over to Cheese Land.
I do a little bit. Whenever somebody really twists my arm and says, "Hey man, they're getting nice fish over there. Let's go." And the North Shore is either blown out or, you know, nothing's going on. I'll venture over, but the North Shore just has a special place in my heart, man. I love it.
Good. It's awesome.
And did I see this past spring, were you hobo living out of a truck up on the North Shore for a while? Is that like an annual hobo trip, or is it something you just started up?
No, it's not an annual. it was kind of by necessity. So like, normally, you know, as all fishing guides do, we have, you know, like three jobs. It's hard for any fishing guide up here to really make it on guiding alone. So, my normal job is I work for the Cloquet Hockey Association, and I'm a maintenance guy there, but with COVID, of course, that was shut down. So it's like, what do I do? You know, it's like, I got to do something. So my dog and I, we just outfitted my truck box with a big full, like a twin mattress, and put a heater in it and really had it dialed in nice. And we just lived on it for like weeks at a time.
Yeah. That's like every guy's dream, I think, right, is to spend a few weeks living out of the back of the truck.
It was cool. But then the DNR kind of caught on to me, like being a hobo. I was never camping really. I would never set up a camp or set a fire or anything. I was just parking on different spots and parking in like Super Ones or parking in, grocery store lots, whatever, mm-hmm. just wherever I could park. It got to the point where I eventually parked up the north by the North Shore by the Devil's Track River. I was calling the dump home for a couple nights.
Wow. All for a couple fish.
You can park,
Yeah,
all for some slimy steelhead. So
yeah.
Whatever.
That's pretty awesome though. Like Matt said, I think that's any guy's dream, is to straight hobo fish it for as long as you can. But mm-hmm. I'm sure you racked up some numbers. Cool. That's for sure.
It was good. Some days were good. Some days were bad. But it was fun waking up, kicking the dog out of bed, and then Lake Superior was right there every morning, so it was cool to wake up to that. And I kind of went through like a 3-week like reset period. Your body just kind of like gets back to its normal rhythm, and it was sweet, man. It was a good time.
Yeah, you really get to know, where you're fishing and what you're fishing for when you do it every single day from sun up to sundown. I mean, you had to have been like dialed in like you've never been dialed in before.
Yeah, it was weird. My buddies would call me because they were working or they were doing something, and I was just this bum. But they would be like, hey man, how's it going? And I would say, a nice big pot of fish just got into the river this morning. How do you know they got in here? So I fished it yesterday all day and they were here. So
yeah.
Yeah. So they pushed in and they're fresh. You got to get up here now.
Oh, we got to work and
we got jobs.
The wife wants to go to dinner tomorrow.
I got to, probably not at that point, but like, I got to mow the grass, some stupid like household chore or something like that. Well, when you were up there hoboing out of the truck, did you see Sasquatch?
And that's a thing I wanted to bring up. I think so. A couple nights where it's like I woke up and I don't know, it was like the shape or a figure kind of just came by the truck window.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Could have been.
Well, I was looking at some article or something today, and it was a 700-pound black bear was harvested out of Wisconsin. And
yeah, Black River
Falls. Yeah, that girl got it. That young.
Yeah, out of Black River Falls, and I swear that's probably the size of the Sasquatch that tried to run Matt and I down on the river a few years back.
You guys saw it too.
Yeah. Heard it.
He wasn't running me down. Oh. He was coming directly for you.
Yeah, that was
what he
was.
Got one whiff of you, and he says, "I want me some of that."
His chops.
But yeah, I can't even imagine like hanging down like on a river down by like Ellsworth, Wisconsin, and all of a sudden you look downstream and there's a 700-pound black bear. Granted, it wasn't in Ellsworth, but like, that caliber size bear is possible, in Western Wisconsin. That's insane. Unless that thing was just like sitting in somebody's backyard eating Twinkies for like the last 3 years.
Yeah. He's been sitting on a bait pile for like the last month and a half.
Yeah. I'm just, holy cow. But
yeah, that thing, was huge.
What, being up there in on the shore that long, like what's the coolest thing that you've seen? Like, let's take fishing out of it. Like,
yeah.
Craziest, weirdest, coolest thing that you've seen up there.
One night I kind of got cabin fever. So like, I mean, you sit in the truck box long enough, like with yourself, it's like, I got to get out and do something. So I went down to the beach up, I was up north of Grand Marais, and I went out and I was going to make this little like, you know, beach fire, you know, just kind of have a beer and relax by myself. And so I get out and walking down and looking for firewood, picking up little sticks and stuff to get the fire going. I look up down the beach and like 20 yards away, there's just this glowing set of eyeballs looking at me on the beach. And I'm just like, you know, it kind of takes you back for a second. Like you can't see it, you know, it's just the eyes reflecting and your light's kind of like bouncing back. So you can't make out the shape or the form or whatever it is. And you can tell it's a bigger animal. So I thought, whatever, it's a deer, you know, and I just went back to picking sticks up, right? So I get closer up and here's this deer that had been like roadkill and died. So it was this big wolf picking the carcass, you know, and and here I was just, you know, like 15 yards away picking up sticks like a moron.
That's loud.
But you just kind of like shed it off like, oh, a wolf would never be this close.
But, well, by that point, he probably looked at you and said, ah, he's one of us. He's been up here long enough.
He probably smelled like,
he smells
smelled like the deer that he's eating.
Well, we've established
that's exactly it.
We've established that. So you can go up to the North Shore. There's a few rivers you can hit if you've never been up there before. Berkeley Power Bay Trout Works. Motto running line.
They kill it.
Dirty mop flies. You had one fly to tie for yourself. What's your go-to?
I'm going to do one fly for steelhead in general is going to be an egg. And that's hands down because eggs always work. In either chartreuse or Oregon cheese. I love Oregon cheese.
Is that an official color?
My winner. That is an official color. Yeah, that is a trout for not a McFly foam. It's an official. I think it's McFly foam trout cheese or something like that, but it's real. It's a real deal.
Does Oregon make cheese?
You know, I don't know, but this cheese that they got here is good. I mean, it's a nice light cheddar color.
Well, not like a smoked good cheese, which would be more accurate for right now, maybe. That's not funny. It's bad things are happening in Oregon, but that was my attempt at a terrible, terrible joke.
Not a very good joke.
No. Oh, there it is. Now we're getting along.
Now we're
getting along. Just like the Swiss. All right. Matt, you got any tying questions?
Well, I'm trying to look up trout cheese McFly foam.
We're fact checking right now. The guy that works at the
Oregon McCheese, it says. It's kind of a yellowish orange.
That's fantastic. That is a good name. I'll take that.
I don't know why, but when I started steelheading, this old timer told me about it. You got to use Oregon cheese. And I carry like, so I don't tie my eggs beforehand. I snell all my yarn on. And it's just kind of the old time trick where I carry like a Plano box that's like, 12 by 5. And it's filled, it's like drilled out. The compartments are drilled out. And I carry like 30 different kinds of yarn with different colors. So depending on how the water looks and how high and colorful it is, or, you know, muddy, whatever, I can make my patterns right on the riverbank. So
what determines what color you pick? I mean, is it like if the wind's blowing out of the east and there's like 80% cloud cover and the water's 30% stained, you're going with Oregon cheese with the chartreuse spot?
If I wake up and I hear three coyotes howling, it's going to be a red day.
Right. That's a good system. I like it.
Yeah. But four coyotes, you got to go blue. No, man. So,
blue. Whoa.
Yeah. I know. So when in doubt, blew it out. People, and you can break it down however you want, but dirtier water, brighter color you want. You know, like the Brule, chartreuse and orange blood dot is like the winner over there. But that water's a little clear, kind of has the like a tannin color to it. On the North Shore, you know, you look at egg life cycles, obviously. So when an egg is fresh, a steelhead egg is 6 millimeters. So you're looking at beads. Some guys use beads. I know I do occasionally. If you're looking at them in the store, they go like 6, 8, 10, 12 and up from there. But a steelhead real egg is 6 millimeters. So low, clear water, fresh eggs coming out. You want to use like a translucent orange or a translucent yellow, something that's really natural in a 6 mil. As the eggs progress, you know, they kind of go to a milkier or opaque color. So you're going to kind of, you know, put like a peach color on something that's got some more substance to it. And you can go larger as well. I'll run 8 millimeters so they see it. 8 mil is kind of my happy medium. But everyone's got their own favorite. My favorite kind of color is red and orange or the Oregon cheese. I cycle between, I call it a fireball or Oregon cheese. And those are my yarn winners.
Are you particular to a certain hook that you tie with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if I'm going to do regular yarn flies, I'll snell them on a Gamakatsu, either a size 6, you can size 8 if you're going really small yarn, tiny size, you know, 6 mil. But if I'm doing like high, fast water and my yarn fly is like, you know, 14 mil, like big honking jumbo, like the size of an olive, Kalamata olive, like a blue cheese stuffed olive, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I've had people that are like, why would you use yarn that big? And then the next thing you're asking them to net your fish. But
because it sucks.
Because it works. Yeah, high, fast water, big old yarny. But I'll use that on like a size 4. You know, something that I really like to, you know, I use a heavier leader. I use like 10 to 12 pound fluoro, which would be like, say like a 2X, 3X in fly. Leader material, but I run heavy leader, fluorocarbon leader, because it doesn't get dinged up as much, and I like to really turn fish and get them in fast. You know, I don't want to. A lot of times I fish alone, so I don't want to chase fish down the river. It's, for one, it's dangerous, and for two, I don't want to be beating this fish up on the rocks and have it going across gravel, or, you know, I don't want to have this fish jump down a waterfall. It just worked 2 days to get back up, and so
yeah.
So I run heavy rod, heavy leader, you know, 8 weights, plenty of torque. I bite them down and dirty, but that size 4 hook, it bites heavy in their mouth, and they, you know, with yarn, you know, we're not worrying about you know, mortally injuring a fish. We don't run live bait. We don't run you know, the night crawlers or spawn, something that they can really gobble up. They're all artificial stuff. So normally it's right in the beak when you hook them. With beads, you hook them in the maxillary, but you know, we try to get those fish in as fast as possible, and we use as big as gear as possible for that reason.
Sounds like a good method to go.
Yeah.
And the faster you get them in, the more you can catch.
Yeah.
Get back to fishing.
Yeah.
So are you bringing the clicker with, you know, junior counter while you're out there catching fish?
Oh yeah. some days, yeah. No, you know what, like, a good day for me is still one fish. It sends me home content. There are days where it's like you stop fishing because you've caught as much as you wanted, but it's still that one fish, that one steelhead mentality for me. It's just like, cool. My day's made, man. I got a smile for the rest of the afternoon.
Well, speaking of one fish, is there one fish that either haunts your dreams? Well, actually, let's start with that one. Is there a fish that haunts your dreams, that
the one that got away?
Yeah. And what are the GPS coordinates of where it was?
that fish is probably, I don't know, that fish is probably a fossil by now. But I was fishing the middle shore, and part of our policy, Minnesota Steelhead policy, is we'll give we'll divide the shore into three different segments: lower shore, middle shore, upper shore. Lower shore would be like Leicester to Stewart. Middle shore would be like Baptism area, Gooseberry area. Upper shore is like Grand Marais. So just so we're clear on that, is, you know, I don't give river names out a lot to people. I just say, hey, lower, middle shore, or lower, middle, upper is going, you know, get up there.
Yeah.
I was fishing the middle shore one day and I hooked a fish that I just couldn't turn. And I had a buddy come and I think he had a couple too many refreshments and he just, he tried to get the net under this fish and it was gone, you know, it took off. So I went down the river and the river's too high to really chase the fish. So I had a buddy go out and kind of creep on a rock point. And I threw my rod in the water because the fish was so big. I said, I can't risk it. So I threw my fly rod in the river and it went down river, got washed downstream. And he grabbed it and I kind of grabbed the line, recovered it, pulled, made sure the fish was on. It was a ordeal. It was like a circus, I bet you, if you were watching.
Yeah.
Horrible. So I got this fish again. And so it's running down river and my other buddy gets down below it. And he's getting ready to net it. And I raised this fish and it's just huge, which, you know, it's like just a monster of a fish. And again, he goes for the net job, misses it. And he does that one more time. And finally he goes at the fish and you do a classic slash attack and knocks the fish and it takes off into their current and wraps around a log and snaps me off. And then I exploded.
you became unglued, I would imagine.
Normally I try to keep pretty well kept up, like, hey man, a fish is a fish,
right?
Yeah, something like that. At that caliber, you lose it.
Hey, I totally understand. I know a net guy like that. It's frustrating.
I was on a sightseeing adventure and I was not close enough. I still feel like that cutthroat, you could have gotten your leg out from the line and you would have been fine.
That was a giant cutthroat.
Man.
We'll never know how big it really was.
We'll never know. Yeah.
I'm surprised. It was close to 25, 26, 27, maybe.
It was probably 36 inches.
It was easily pushing 42 inches. Yeah. It was probably like an all-time world record, I'm sure.
Probably. Yeah. And, oh, yeah. I mean, you were fishing like 10x tippet, and it was like a size 32 midge. You mended it.
Yeah, middle of night.
Mending dry flies. I mean, it was crazy. Surrounded by a buffalo herd.
Yeah, it was. It was quite the. It would have made a good video, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. So is this guy still a fishing buddy? Do you allow him to come attempt to net your fish any longer, or do you make him sit on shore in sadness?
Because I've got a list of questions up for interviewing new fishing buddies.
Yep.
I would love that. I love the process. One is still a partner. One got his net man license revoked.
Good.
Just totally. Sorry, you're done.
Yeah,
you know it's interesting. Maybe fish ponds would take this up. They should build a breathalyzer into the net.
Yeah.
So you know,
and then depending on your alcohol, your blood alcohol, that determines the size of the basket.
That's very true. Yeah. Not a bad idea.
If you're blowing like I don't know, like a 3, not 0.3, like 3. You know, that basket is like you're scooping a sheet of plywood, you know.
I think it turns into a coffin at that point if you're blowing a 3.
Yeah, they just wrap you up, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
Water wings appear off the side to save yourself from drowning. But so it got away. That happens. Well, I think that happens to everybody, you know?
It does. And that's what keeps us going, though.
That's how I feel about losing, like, 10-inch fish. So, you know, that's just what we do down here.
Yeah, he comes unglued.
Yeah.
Just freak out.
Just lose my shit. Speaking of lose your shit, how many guiding clients have you had over the water waiters?
Just one. One guy, and this is good. We were on the Brule, and it was Brule opener. I think week after. Point is, it was cold. It was
Minnesota Brule.
Wisconsin Brule. Wisconsin Brule. I did some guiding on the Wisconsin Brule a few years back, and I had since just decided to kind of not do it anymore. That's but fair. We were out with some guys, and we were getting some fish. We had three or four gentlemen out with us, and it was a great day. It was cold, but man, fish were going. And we were in the sucker hole. I don't know if you're familiar, if you fished the Brule before much, but mm-hmm. we were in the sucker hole, and it's a big sweeping corner. And there was a big ice shelf on the side or the inside of this hole. And when the one gentleman was roll casting, and he was just about getting out to the run where he needed to be, but he was brave. So he kept on walking out on the ice shelf. And you're thinking to yourself, oh, it broke. And like, no, it didn't break. But he was out far enough where he wanted to take one more step. And he did. And he thought that underneath the ice shelf was like a foot, inches of water. So he stepped off. I looked over, and all I saw was this, like the big flat, or the big huge brim hat, like the, Indiana Jones style or whatever, there they are. Oh, West. River runs through it. Deal. All I saw was his hat level. That's all I saw. I looked down. I was like, "Oh my god!" So I run over and pull this guy out of the water, and he's freezing. It's cold.
Yeah.
The worst part about it was his buddies were having such a good time fishing that they didn't wait the truck for six more hours.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So he sat in the truck with the heat on the whole day, like naked. Obviously.
Oh man.
But yeah. I normally don't have people go over their waders because I tell people on the shore, if you're walking over your knees, you're stepping on fish. So no need.
Yeah. And I think that can go with any fishing anywhere. It's amazing. Matt and I think we talk about it almost every podcast or every time we're out fishing, like how many times people are stepping on fish or just cast where you're about to be. Mm-hmm. It's amazing the size of fish that'll sit 4 feet off the bank.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's incredible that I've seen fish. I learned a lesson the hard way by walking up river and almost stepping on fish and having a mid to high 20s fish below and under my feet. It's like, well, you gotta learn. So I tell people, and normally mud boots are fine unless you gotta get in to chase fish or take a photo with the fish, but over your knees, you're on fish, man.
Yep. Good advice. What other advice you got for would-be steelheaders? Don't walk in the water.
Don't walk in the water.
Don't drink too much when netting fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can be guilty of that too. Take your time, relax. Steelheading is not a game of numbers most of the time. You work for your fish, and you have to put time in on a hole. A lot of times, if you think there's a fish, if you look at a hole and you think, man, that looks good, there's going to be something in there. If you get there early, if you get there before before the sun has come over the trees, the water's cold. So the fish are dormant. They're hugging bottom. You don't have to traipse around the river. Bust out your thermos of coffee, relax, talk to your buddies, hang out. When that sun comes up and that water starts bumping up, just 2 degrees, 1-2 degrees, and it goes quick when that water is, muddy and low. Fish will turn on. They'll get going, and all of a sudden that water you just drifted that was dead just filled with fish that slid out of a deep pocket. And now they're moving up river. Now they're accessible. So take your time. If you think there's a fish there, and you're throwing a yellow bead, throw a red one, throw a stonefly, throw a mop, throw a squirm worm, switch it up, because that fish will probably eat if you give it what it wants.
So you find that you can fish to a fish more than like, you know, some guys are like, oh, if you, you know, if you go through here three or four times, you know, there's nothing there, keep moving. You feel that you can work a pocket or a section of water more than, you know, just the three or four casts?
Certainly. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You know, and
changing it up.
Change it up. Or if you're, you know, say you and me and Grant were fishing, I would say, Grant, you know, I can't hook anything, step in. And everyone drifts different, everyone fishes different. Everyone's got a different setup, a different feel. Sometimes a different angler has the key to unlock that run. It's a weird kind of a deal, but, you know, if I can't hook a fish in 15, 20 drifts, say, ah, someone else move in, get in here and try. Mm-hmm. And, it's someone else with maybe a different presentation or a different setup and, you know, two drifts in, they cork one and it's on, but, yeah, change it up, try something different or just give it a rest, you know, 10 drifts, nothing, relax, kind of have your lunch. And just watch what's going on. So sometimes mm-hmm. you'll see the fish back out of the deep run and tail a little bit and then shoot back into the deep water. That's something that you'll miss if the fish sees you standing, you know, standing up next to the river.
Right. Awesome.
And then the last one would be let the fish run. If the fish wants to run, let it run.
Let it go.
Let it go. Yeah. I get a lot of people that come up and they have a lot of trout anglers. You know, I think you can kind of manhandle a fish and we're using heavier leaders and heavier lines, obviously, but, you know, a 28 inch trout will still snap a 10 pound leader. Like it's not even there if it wants to go. So the drag is your friend. Don't try to, fight a fish with, you know, hand on the line, get that fish on the reel ASAP and then fight it with your drag.
That's a good practice for anybody. That's a good practice for anybody fishing is, you know, get the fish on the reel. You know, I always tell people, you know, you spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars on this fancy, pretty reel and all you use it for is for holding the line, you know, get that fish on the reel and let the reel do its job other than holding line and looking fancy.
Yeah. The drag is your friend because a fish, people that want to fight the fish with their hands, you know, that fish will outrun your reflexes. The fish is faster than you when it wants to be. So you can't get your hands off that line fast enough. That fish will just, it'll snap it. So like you said, use your equipment, man. You bought it.
Yep. You got anything else, Grant?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, what do you do up on the North Shore when you're not chasing steelhead, Aaron?
Well, this time of year, it's salmon season. So we got our pink salmon coming in, which are they're cool to see. Coming in high numbers. You know, the water's low, so you can see their spawning activity and watch them move and swim around. We also have some coho salmon, some king salmon. And we have our coaster brook trout, which are closed to fishing, but they are around. And if you like brook trout, if there's the driftless for brook trout, it's pretty awesome to see an 18 to 22 inch brook trout hit the net on the North Shore.
Yeah, those are cool fish.
I've seen one in the water once up there. It's called the Upper Shore. My wife and I were hanging around by one of the rivers up there, and all of a sudden I looked in the water. I was like, that looks like a brook trout. I was like, that looks like a brook trout on steroids. But kind of hanging out, chilling. I was like, holy shit. That could be an addicting game, I feel like, to get into. I imagine there's guys that just probably concentrate on fishing those coasters for most of the season when they can.
Yeah, I mean, there are guys that target them. Like I said, they're closed season. So they below barriers on Minnesota on their Lake Superior tributaries, they close the first of September. But, you know, the thing about the coasters is they lay in the same runs that you would fish for steelhead, kings, cohos, you know, every other, trout and salmon that you're going to target, it is going to hang in the same area. So you're eventually going to catch them. We just ask anglers to be respectful. If you're going to photograph them, you know, make it quick. Usually just put them in the net, let them go. But yeah, because they're in their breeding, and our coastal brook trout are very, very fragile yet. They were decimated years and years ago, and they're on the comeback, but we still have to do our part to make sure that comeback is permanent. So,
right. Yeah, we want them around for a while.
Yeah, we do, because a 20-inch brook trout is gorgeous, especially when they're colored up with their fire engine red fins and
yeah,
they're cool.
Yeah. Well, I got to ask the question. Matt, you asked it the last time we talked to a steelhead fan. So,
yeah.
Great Lakes, is it a steelhead?
God, that's... I want to say, yeah, it's a steelhead. Because, you know, the guys from the PNW, they say, well, it's not a steelhead. It doesn't hit the ocean. Well, our fish, our Great Lakes fish, our Lake Superior fish, were taken, the original genetic strain was taken from the PNW. So if they want to get technical, and we do have the exact same steelhead as you. Yes, they are a naturalized strain. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we have the same fish as them. They just run into a lot smaller ocean, a lot less saltier ocean.
That's what I tell people too, you know. They're from the, and I think they mixed them with, you know, they're predominantly the steelhead from out west, and I'll probably screw this up and somebody will yell at me, but I do believe they did mix them with a rainbow strain a little bit. I don't believe they're pure Pacific Northwest ocean running fish. I think they tried and they didn't quite take, so they mixed it with a little bit of rainbow. And we got what we got. And they're fun fish to fish.
Well, they're great. And anyone that really wants to know, you know, I try to explain as much as I can. And I'm, like Matt said, you know, we could be wrong. I'm not an expert on them. I fish for them. I try to promote them. But I'm not a fisheries biologist, and I can't claim to be. But if you really want to know about our Lake Superior fish on the North Shore, I encourage anyone to reach out to Nick Peterson at the Minnesota DNR. He runs the French River hatchery there, the biology division. He will field any questions from anyone. You can email him, you can call him. He's a wonderful dude. He's huge into, you know, getting our steelhead to really thrive. He's out, he fishes himself. He just recently got into steelhead. He fishes for the coastal brook trout when he can. So he's out in the field and he's trying to understand what anglers want. If you have questions mm-hmm. about the species or about the strain, call them up. Get, you know, don't go on Facebook or don't go on the internet and get the secondhand or third hand version,
right. Yeah.
Which I see a lot of anglers doing and then repeating that information verbatim that could be incorrect. Go right to the source. He's willing to help any guy out. So,
yep. And then I encourage people to contact the DNR for any questions they have. I mean, they're, you know, state employees and they work for us, and they love to, you know, sit and talk to people. So, you know, if you see a, you know, a station or an office, stop in and, you know, talk to them. I think a lot of times they get bitched at and get the, you know, how come I was fishing this section of river and I didn't see any fish? And, you know, it's not their fault, you know, but yeah, if you're decent with them and you talk to them, they'll give you all kinds of information.
Yeah. Thank your local fish biologist or thank your local DNR warden. Cause guess what? They're out there helping us, you know, make sure we can continue doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
And getting out there on the daily.
Yeah. Yeah. They're working a lot longer hours than you guys would think. It's not just, you know, Nick, especially, it's not just a 9-to-5 job, a state job where people think, you know, it's an easy deal. You know, Nick's working, he's got many accredited awards, not just the state, but nationally of the work he's done with the steelhead genetics project, you know, finding out if the Kamloops and the steelhead are interbreeding. So yeah, these guys are working hard and they want to hear feedback from us anglers and know that, you know, we care as much as them. So yeah, like Matt said, reach out, man.
Because I'd say more than most of the time, they're probably excited to have a conversation with somebody about fish. You know, and that's a positive conversation instead of, like Matt said, just getting bitched at about anything. So,
yeah.
Well, that's good. And so DNR resource, the MN Steelheader website, and I'm assuming Facebook page has usually got a bunch of really good information. If somebody wants to join, because it's an organization that you can join up or donate to, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, so we have links right on our website on MinnesotaSteelheader.com. You can go to there. On that website, we have links to our free clinics, links to some of our cleanups we do. And if you want to donate or join, we have links right on the front page for that as well. We also have volunteer opportunities for people that want to help out. At some of our clinics, sometimes we are understaffed. Take example, our Women on the Fly clinic, which is one of the largest growing clinics that we've ever had. I think last year we opened it up and it filled up in like 20 minutes or something like that. It was 30 gals in like 20 minutes that signed up. And we had a waiting list that was three times as long. But we want more volunteers, you know, able people that that know how to, you don't have to be a steelhead expert, but basic fly fishing, knot tying, rigging, things like that, casting. We're always looking for people to help out. And if you have the time and you know, the willpower, the know-power to come and do it, we'd love to have you.
And I'm looking at your website now. If you donate, you get a free long sleeve t-shirt.
Heck yeah.
And it's a good deal. Yeah, it looks nice.
That's a good deal.
Yeah.
Everybody needs a pretty long sleeve t-shirt with fall time coming up. Gotta stay
darn right.
Says steelhead.
Just buy a shirt.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's going to a good cause. Yeah. Darn right. Yeah. We're all nonprofit. You know, we don't take the money and use it for any of our personal gain. All the money that you give to us goes into clinics, goes into buying more supplies. It goes into buying, if you go to the North Shore, you see signage. It says no travel hooks. It goes into buying things like that. So it goes back into the resource. The money that you put in goes right back into the fishery.
Awesome. Yeah. Donate to Minnesota Steelheaders. And then you guide as well. How could somebody get a trip?
I guide through not Minnesota Steelheader, but through North Shore Guide Service. And we're NorthShoreGuideService.com. You can hop on there, look us up. We offer spring and fall trips. We do some summer trips if you're interested for inland trout, but most of our trips are migratory species. Mm-hmm. You can hop on there. Our direct lines are on there. You can call us. You can email us. Anything that you want, we're willing to talk to you. And if people have questions about the shore and they want to know what's going on, we invite them to give us a call as well.
And what kind of sandwich could somebody expect on a trip with you? That's always like the most important question. I don't care about fish. I want to know what sandwich I'm going to get.
So here's the deal with my guide mentality. Like after like 27 trips, like I don't do sandwiches. I can't do it. I can't go back to the truck and have a freaking sandwich. So I started to do I'll talk to my customers or clients and I say like, what do you prefer? What do you want? Like, last year, for example, a couple of days I did like a taco for Cinco de Mayo. I did a taco salad. Yeah, I brought my grill up, mix it up a little bit.
Yeah.
I like this. I like where this is going.
Yeah. Yep.
Burgers,
you had me at taco.
Taco salad. And I brought some Dos Equis beer out and the guy says, hey man, this is great, but what if we had some limes? And I pulled them in my pocket. Two limes.
Nice. Yeah. Good
job. That's well done.
What I'm getting at is I got to eat too. I got to have a good lunch. And as a guy, it's like, I want to have something good and have something to fill the belly when it's cold in the spring.
Nice. So,
I like cooking something good. It's hearty.
So if you want something better than a sandwich, call Aaron.
Yeah.
Especially around the beginning of May is a good time to go.
So Cinco,
come on down.
Matt, Cinco de Mayo next year is on a Wednesday, so maybe we'll have to come visit the weekend before or after for a Cinco de Mayo fishing adventure with some tacos, some Tecate, and some fish, some good steelhead up there. And we can find you on the Instagram, right? And what is it, North Shore Steel?
That's me.
All right.
Yours truly.
Awesome. Well, do you have any questions for us?
What are you getting tied on there, Matt? What's going on?
I don't have anything on there. My little tripod that holds my phone is right behind my vise. So that's what you get to look at instead of my ugly mug.
He's prepared.
What's been on your vise lately? What have you been tying?
I finished up a big order of hoppers and was kind of burned out actually from doing that. So I haven't tried all that. Lately, so I got to get back into it. I got some streamers that people want, and we'll probably get ramped up here in the next few days, and then tie all.
I suppose
all week.
The mop flies are coming in. Do you get orders for mop flies?
I farm those out. I source.
You carve? does Carve tie all of your mop flies for you?
Yeah, he does. I actually am allergic to mops, so my wife will attest to that.
It doesn't fit the hands right. Just doesn't.
No, I can say I've never said the longest time that I have never and never will tie a pink squirrel, but that changed one time, and now I tie pink squirrels. But I can honestly say that I've never tied a squirmy worm or a mop fly. And maybe if we come fishing with you and I hook into a decent fish on a mop fly, it might change my mind. But for now, I'm going with no mop flies.
Yeah, we can change the attitude real quick. those brown trout and bridge beater stickers are good luck.
Correct. Yes, yeah. They sure are.
I was going to show you. I tacked. I dug it out just for you.
Oh, boy. One on.
Okay. This is my salt box, okay?
That's an OG one.
I mean, it is. Yeah, this is, was this first gen or what?
Yeah.
Yep.
So I got my both of my two permit that I caught DIY right there. I mean, that's.
You're welcome. I mean, we're here to help your fishing adventures go smoothly.
I mean, that witch doctor that we pay, to put the mojo on the stickers and the bridge beer swag, he doesn't come cheap. So I'm glad that it's works. Paying off for you.
That hell of a shaman.
Well, I think next time we chat with you, I think we'll have to talk about DIY salty trips and some of your Western adventures too, because it looks like you guys had a pretty good time. But we're running on time here, but thanks again, man. I really appreciate it. Hopefully this crazy world settles down and we can get together for a beer soon and do some fishing.
Yep.
I know, I hear you.
All right. Well, be safe up there. Hopefully you guys get some rain. So the fishing can get good for you, and it is fall time. Maybe it's soup on the river instead of sandwiches in the fall. So give that a shot. Like soup.
Yeah. Nice shout-out.
Nice shout-out. There you go. All right. Thanks, listeners. Again, always like, share, follow, share with your friends, and give Aaron a shout if you want to go fishing. Follow Minnesota Steelheader. And thank your local conservation officer and fisheries biologist. They need it. So thank you, guys. We'll talk to you next time.
Good night.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.